Everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com in association with Yahoo Sports and Uncrowned. Dan Canobio, the champ. Chris Algieri, look at this. We're both at home. We're not in our hotels, but soon we will be on the road. Only a couple days at home before we head back out because May is an absolutely loaded month. We just saw David Benavidez put a whooping on Gilberto Ramirez, Naoya Inoue, the fallout there. We'll talk a little bit about Benavidez on this episode. We got Fabio Wardley taking on Daniel Dubois, one of the biggest all-British heavyweight title fights in quite a while. We'll break that down. Chris is heading over to Atlanta for Angelo Leo versus Rais Alim. So it's a loaded, loaded weekend. It's a loaded month. This is the good stuff. This is why we pod, Chris.
Yeah, Dan, you said we're home, and like, you're like rubbing it in my face. I'm leaving in like 3 hours. I'm jumping on that plane. At least I'm only going to Atlanta. It's two hours away from here in South Florida.
That's an easy flight.
Very easy flight. And we're staying right by the airport, too. So this is going to be a nice in-and-out weekend.
Love that. This weekend I'm home, and then I'm heading out to California for the MVP MMA on Netflix.
Nice.
Manhattan Beach. They got the open workouts on Venice Beach on Wednesday night.
That's cool.
That's going to be...
Manhattan Beach is nice, man. I spent a lot of time over there during the pandemic, actually.
Did you see I'm part of the Fight House Volume 2?
I saw that.
Ariel Helwani and Jake Paul have been added to it. They collabed. It was a collab post to announce it, me and Ariel. So I got a lot of... But 92 comments, about 90 of them are, who are these people? I hate you, Dan. Who the heck is Dan Canobio? Ariel, you're too old for this. I'm not watching this. Nightmare blunt rotation. This is gay. Everything. Nothing good.
Nothing good. Well, nothing good lives on the internet, buddy. on social
there
media.
It is.
Anyway, there's no positive people who are on the socials anymore. That's hilarious. I was just going to say, like, oh, Ariel. I like seeing Ariel all over. So the more Ariel, the better. I think he does a great job.
Yeah, he's going to be in the mix.
And he's super enjoyable to hear, and he'll give it back to you too. Like, he's not just gonna roll over. So I like that about him. But that's funny, man. Yeah, the socials are that's not where nice people hang out.
No, I'm used to it by now. But it's gonna be a fun week next week. That's next week. And then we also have, you know, some big fights with May 16th is Keyshawn Davis fighting on DAZN. He was in Vegas last week doing the rounds and got to talk to him a little bit. And, you know, he's calling out all sorts of names, but he's fighting Nahir Albright. That's May 16th. May 30th is Oshaki Foster and Ray Ford.
Good fight. Really good fight.
A lot of fight. May 23rd is Usyk Verhoeven, if you're into that. There's some other good fights on that card.
May 22nd, I'm going out to San Jose. Amari Jones is fighting. So I'll be out there for that.
Is that that's a De La Hoya, isn't it?
Yes, it's Golden Boy. Yeah, it's Golden Boy on DAZN.
Wow. Is that your first Golden Boy show?
It is.
That's awesome.
It is.
That's great. Love that. All right. Let's get started. Obviously, David Benavidez, when he put that whooping on Zerto Ramirez, it sent some shockwaves through the boxing world. And I love that Benavidez did media on Monday and Tuesday of this week. I hate when fighters have an unbelievable performance and then they disappear. People are searching you. You're at your highest popularity on fight night and then the following couple of days. So I think that's a great thing that Benavidez went on. He went on Ariel Helwani's show on Uncrowned. He went on the Porter Way podcast. He went on a lot of shows. But he did say some things that kind of left me kind of scratching my head, and we definitely got to talk about them. So Benavidez went on the Porter Way podcast with our friend Sean Porter, Sean Zettel, and he offered up a catch weight versus Bivol of 190 pounds. And he says, oh, this way, the cruiserweight title could be on the line, the light heavyweight title could be on the line. Bivol has talked about wanting to fight for the cruiserweight title. And I'm just thinking, like, oh no, like, he's already like retreating from 175. It's also just like, I don't think that can happen. Because I believe light heavyweight, isn't there a limit of 175 pounds? I just didn't like that from Bivol. He did say that he thinks the fight with Bivol can happen at the end of the year, not September. And if he starts now, he can get down to 175. It wasn't like the same bravado and like, yeah, 175 next, Bivol next. You know, he's kind of throwing out other alternatives here. And I was like, ah, man, I don't exactly love that.
Yeah, I had a little trepidation fight week when he was saying, I feel so good. You're going to see the best version of me. Because if you go out there and you do exactly what he did, you're not going to want to leave the weight class. You're going to want to struggle and get back down to 75 when you literally look your best at this weight. So the writing was kind of on the wall with that. And now that he's alluding to that, that tells me that he's probably not going back down to 75 again, which is a real shame because I know I really want that Bivol fight. But listen, David is full of surprises. He's one of the most genuine badass guys out there today. So if he sticks his mind, puts his mind to it, yeah, I think we could see it. And I think that's smart of him to push off September because he's probably going to need more time to get the weight down properly.
I think it's more of a Bivol thing they're saying.
Well, too. Bivol's got another fight coming up, and he's listening coming off a back surgery. No, I know it's a back injury. Didn't he not have a surgery? Am I making surgery. Things up? Yeah, that's surgery. You got to test that out. You don't know how that's going to react on a fight night with the level of intensity that a fight brings. So, yeah, not the best news. But listen, is it the worst news if Benavidez stays at cruiser and then is searching out the Opatai fight, which is a great fight. Yeah, definitely a little bit of letdown. I want to see him back at 75. We said that on our last show. But time will tell, right?
Yeah, the Opatai stuff really kind of went off, too. A lot of stuff we put on socials, whether it was Benavidez saying, all right, that fight's going to happen in 2 years, which I think is a pretty truthful and honest assessment. The thing with Benavidez is he's very rarely going to lie.
No, yeah, genuine.
All fighters lie.
That's why I said he's genuine.
Right. All fighters lie or stretch the truth or are told one thing from their promoters. But, you know, we can't knock a fighter for not saying anything, but then also get on them when they are very truthful or they're very sincere or just blunt, which Benavidez is. So when I asked him about Opatai and he tells me, all right, 2 years. And everyone's looking at that as, oh, it's duck. 2 years is duck, duck, duck. All these comments. I'm like, I can't believe it. Like, I understand. Fans are crazy. We've been through this many times. Fans are it's short for fanatical. They have their guys. It's mostly Opataya fans or Canelo fans that don't like Benavidez. The duck comments, this guy is, I can't believe he's putting up his own roadblocks. It's not Zuffa. So I did want to talk about that too. It's like, I think we went through this a lot. The only way it's a problem is if the Zuffa belt is on the line. Because they can easily fight on a ring card. They've done that. Benavidez has fought on ring cards and Opataya believe has fought on a ring card. It could be wrong there, but he's definitely fought in Saudi Arabia. So from what we've seen, the IBF stripped him, Opataya, because the ring belt was also on the line. They did not want to acknowledge
a Zuffa belt.
Zuffa belt was on the line. They did not want to acknowledge that belt. So if they are to fight Opataya and Benavidez, can't quote me on this for sure, but what we've seen is that the WBC and the WBO, the belts that Benavidez has, if the Zuffa belt was on the line, I don't think they're going to be working in unison. They're going to use the same, what's the word? The same ruling or grounds.
Precedent.
That's the word. Precedent. Thank you. Same precedent that the IBF used. That's the case with Opataya. That's one thing I wanted to talk about too, because we're getting
also real quick on that. I think it's actually they would need to because they have the leverage in that situation. That if you're ever gonna fight, that would be the time because you have all the leverage on your side. Meaning the governing bodies, WBO and the WBC, have so much leverage in that situation because it's such a big fight that if they're not gonna fight that one, they're gonna allow them to fight for the Zuffa belt. Then the gate's wide open. Then the precedent is set that way.
And you made a good point in the last episode that I think it just kind of goes over fans' heads. I don't expect them to know this stuff. This is what we do. We study this stuff all day long, and we try to bring it to the show so you can kind of digest it. So I don't expect fans to understand the fine tunings of what's going on between Zuffa and the sanctioning bodies because it's absolute mess, and it's very annoying, and I wish it wasn't the case. But I think you brought up a good point last episode where it's like, Zuffa, will they just do that? Will they allow the belt not to be on the line? If the WBO and WBC say, hey, yeah, we want Opataya versus Benavidez, but that Zuffa belt can't be in any of the, it can't be on the line, number one. It can't be involved in the fight. It can't be photographed. It can't be all of that. Is Zuffa going to do that?
That's the question. I think it would not be a good idea this early on to battle like that. But at the same time, it's like, once you allow that to happen, what's going to stop them from all running it over and be like, no, we're not fighting for the Zuffa belt. It does hurt the credibility of the Zuffa belt. But at the same time, are you going to signal to the public that the Zuffa belt is going to stop big fights from happening.
It's not, that's not good publicity.
No.
Another thing too, Chris, if Opatari is, if Benavidez is to win, no, if Opatari is to win,
right,
then he has the belts. WBC, WBO, and the Zuffa title. And I'm pretty damn sure the WBO and the WBC, do they want Opatia as one of their champions when he's very strongly associated with Zuffa, who don't want anything to do with them? They would want Benavidez, who all week long was telling me how great the WBC title is. This is my Super Bowl. All the titles.
Yeah, that could be a situation where if Opatia, it's getting so muddy, man. It's getting so muddy. Would it be a situation where he wins and then he immediately gets stripped, and that's going to be another bad signal? I don't know, man. This is one of those things that we got to see how this is going to play out, and it's going to be step by step where we're going to go.
This is why Benavidez said it's going to take years for this to happen. I have to let it play out because of all the things we just said. Like, we don't know this for sure, but the tea leaves are there. Like, the IBF got stripped him because of Zuffa's involvement. What's to say WBO, WBC won't do that? What's to say WBO, WBC or don't want to risk the chance of Opatia winning, and then he's their champion, and then what? The belts are held hostage, or they just have to have a whole other situation where they're stripping him and all that? I want to see Opatia versus Benavidez, 100%. I almost want to see it just as bad as I wanted to say Bivol, but when he's talking about, oh, let's do a catch rate of 190. Another thing too, Chris, you could answer me here. Can you have the 175 title on the line and 190?
No.
No, right?
No, it's a weight limit for a reason. 175 is the limit. You cannot exceed 175. You can't have a catch weight title. A catch weight above the limit. Because I fought a catchweight title with Pacquiao. Our fight was at 144, even though it was a welterweight title, which was very silly, but also was, I didn't have negotiating power to fight that. I would have rather fought that at 47, because I had put on a lot of weight between the Ruslan fight and a lot of muscle on purpose, because I knew I was going up to the welterweight division. But Freddie was smart and knew that I was big, and it would be better for Pacquiao if I had whittled down to 44, which I did. So
that fight was at 44?
Yeah. It was a welterweight title, the WBO welterweight title, but it was at 44. So I had to make 44 when I wanted to make 47. I'm like, it's a welterweight title. What are we doing? This is silly. And it was silly, but it was a tactic to weaken me before the fight.
A-side behaviors.
Right. And I had no leverage to be able to battle, you know, that negotiating. But in terms of a catch weight above a limit, that's nonsensical.
Yeah, I don't know. He wasn't briefed on that. Did he just go on the show and like just say it, just throw it out there, which, once again, I like when fighters do this. Like, I watched Danny Dubois this week leave interviews, not say anything at all. Or I've interviewed fighters where they offer up nothing. They don't tell us who they want next. Like, Benavidez has laid out his plans for the next couple of fights. He goes on these podcasts and he says things that we want to hear. It's a gift and a curse, because when you throw that out there, and it made some headlines this week, and you have people saying, oh, man, like, he's already backtracking. He's already talking about the weight. He's already talking about 190. Like, and another thing, too, like him saying, like, oh, I'm going to, if I start now, if I get after it right now, then I can get to 175, which is
come December. Yeah. Yeah, it means,
like, we obviously, that happens, but to hear it from a fighter, to hear that, like, we as fans, like, you don't even think about what fighters go through to make the weight and to keep the weight off in between fights, or what they do in between fights.
Even
that was a little eye-opening.
Even recently with Conor Benn coming down from middleweight, he started immediately after that fight, because he's like, I'm going down to 47. He kept, you know, he's telling everyone, I'm going down to 47. Immediately after the second Chris Eubank fight, you saw him visibly get smaller. Like, he was whittling his way down, and look how that turned out. He still struggled mightily to be above the weight. So it's coming back down, man. It's the curse of Roy Jones coming back down to Tarver. He goes to heavyweight. He wins the heavyweight title, and that was he weighed 195. We looked up the other day. It was 195, 196, and then he had to get back down to 75, and he was a shell of himself versus Tarver. So yeah, man, this is a tricky thing to do. Granted, Benavidez is younger than Roy was at that time. But Ben wasn't. Ben struggled with the weight coming back down. It's hard to come back down in weight.
Glad you brought up Roy Jones. Roy Jones did his podcast with Andre Ward. I believe it was called Hall of Game. Very clever name. I like that a lot. And Roy said that Benavidez needs to run to the Usyk fight because Benavidez is hot right now. He said in such Roy fashion, Benavidez is hot right now. I'm still working on that.
That was not bad. There was a twinge of Roy in there.
Benavidez is hot right now. He does that with the hands, and he's like, and he should not fight Opetaia because Opetaia is not hot right now. And he said, broke it down like that. Point being is Roy, who famously went up to heavyweight. But the knock on this, I saw some sleek. You said the internet streets, they'll go after anyone. People were saying about Roy, yeah, it's easy for you to say, Roy, you went up to heavyweight and you could have fought Lennox Lewis, but you fought John Ruiz.
I love Roy. We are very pro Roy podcast. Roy is an absolute legend. I always pay homage to Roy. He's my favorite fighter who I've ever seen fight live in my lifetime. I don't like the idea of going right for Usyk. I know it's a I know it's a big name. I know this would be the only opportunity to do it. And I think that's where he's coming from. Because Usyk's not around for a long time. He's here for a good time, not a long time. So if you're gonna fight a living legend, an epic kind of guy, like you're gonna get one of those fights, you know, this is it. There's not many like Usyk. It's like me getting the Pacquiao fight. Like, if I didn't fight Pacquiao, like, I got to fight a legend. I fought a legend in their prime, you know, not necessarily their prime, but still at the tail end of them being very good. Usyk kind of the same way. Maybe he's not necessarily in his prime, but it's kind of hard to argue that he's not, even though he's older.
Right, still pound for pound number one or two.
So I understand Roy's drive for greatness. Roy believes in that. Roy is one of the fighters who first comes to mind when we have that famous saying, dare to be great. Guys don't dare to be great anymore. Roy dared to be great throughout his whole career. He didn't have the dance partners a lot of times, so he found them. You know, he went up to heavyweight and fought John Ruiz. But John Ruiz and Usyk are basically a different species. It's not like you said, exactly. That was a great comparison. Lennox Lewis was available. You don't see him going up to the tippity top. But I do understand the greatness factor, where you're going up and trying to fight a living legend while you still can. Which I don't know. It's how much is that not? How much is that like a no lose situation for Benavidez?
Because that's another thing he said too. Is like you know you're not expected to win. If you win, it's one of the greatest wins in the last 25 years. You're the heavyweight champion, top of the world.
The more I discuss it, the less crazy I think Roy is. Honestly.
But another thing, David Morrell, I liked what he said here. He said it's a bad move for your career. It's a great move for your bank account.
Yeah.
It's a great move for that. And like right now, it might be the move. Not a good move for your career. And that's what I think too. It's okay, you jump up, you do that. Turkey has come out and put out a ridiculous tweet through Mike Coppinger, through The Ring, which basically comes to Turkey. We want this. We want Usyk versus Benavidez 2027. And that got everyone's juices flowing. And then Benavidez's dad has even came out and said, we have to look at it. That's just, if you don't look at it, that's malpractice, but you have to look at it.
This is another point. That completely kills the Bivol fight. Dead in water.
Yes, dead.
Dead in water. Dead in water if that is alive.
It kills a lot of things. Yeah. It makes for Benavidez to have an unbelievable moment, and Ring has their big card, and they satisfy all their needs on putting on big events. But as like a boxing fan, it's like I'd rather watch. I want to see him fight Bivol. I want to see him fight Beterbiev if he's still around. I want to see him fight Opetaia. Then in 5 years, like David told me all week long, then I'll go to heavyweight, see who's there. But like you said, Usyk won't be there in 5 years. Like Usyk is this era's great heavyweight. I mean, want to see him, but I don't even want to see Usyk fight Benavidez. I want to see Usyk fight Atauma as the passing of the torch.
It's
very muddled, and this is what a turkey that I just can't stand is him. Just like these fantasies that he throws out, yeah. And the whole geopolitical stuff behind it. It's just crazy. When I saw that tweet, it just honestly angered me.
This isn't a video game. Guys can't just jump up to heavyweight and then jump back down and go up and down. And it does matter for their career and their legacy. And I think David is on the precipice of literally, we keep saying this, but I think it's coming more and more realistic because you're seeing the way that he's very media trained, he's very savvy, and he's making the rounds, like you said. He has the potential to be the face of the sport. He does exactly what you want your champions to do. Doing these fantasy fights and going chasing, you know, Usyk before he retires kind of thing really doesn't pay dividends for his career, just like David Morrell's point. Yeah, for his bank account, absolutely. Yeah, for getting an opportunity to fight a legend. Yeah, absolutely. But in terms of the trajectory of where he's at, this guy has never jumped the line. He's been the opposite. He's been blocked and then made his own lane. So I don't know. I think the way that he's been going about his career has been epically flawless. It's been epic and flawless. And this I don't know if that's the right time. I think he's got way more to do down here. I think Usyk has way more to do up there. And when I think about it, honestly, I don't even fancy the fight. I'd rather see, like you said, I'd rather see Usyk, you know, get past Rico, get Caballel, maybe get the winner of Dubois and Wardley. In that case, hopefully it's Wardley. Maybe get the Wilder fight and then go off into the sunset. And David has so much to do at 75. I would like to see him with Bivol. I wouldn't mind a David Morrell match, a rematch. David Morrell is still a very dangerous guy.
Ben Whitaker
is a long way off. Long way off, in my opinion.
Just a name.
Yeah, but potentially he could be somewhere down the line there. Because Ben looked really good when he fought it. He was at 182 pounds his last fight. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that maybe potentially the weight could be bothering him. He might be a little bit better, a better cruiserweight. You got the Opatai fight. I don't know. I'm against the fight. I got to it. I'm against it.
10 minutes ago, you were into it. Now you're against it.
That's just because of Roy. I'm so biased with Roy talks. When Roy says something, I'm like, oh, well, I'll listen.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the only guys that came out and said, go for it. Most of them, the fans, all the comments underneath that Turkey and Ring tweet were like, what are we doing? Like, this is getting out of control with these just like fantasy fights. And like, the same things we just said. I want to see Benavidez fight guys in his own weight class first. Like, he's as flawless as his career has gone, he hasn't exactly fought the top guy in the division. And Bivol is the top guy. Bivol's the fight. They just need to make that fight Bivol's happen. The fight. Just do it at the end of the year, even if it's December or November, December. Do it at 175. And then after that, you can go anywhere. You can go back up to cruiserweight and make your reign there. Like, you know, boil down one more time, have a horrible weight cut one more time for the Bivol fight. That I don't even necessarily think it's like a home run win for Benavidez. I haven't even thought that far yet. I don't think you have either. Like, we're just talking about it being made. A lot of people are just like, it's a foregone conclusion that Benavidez is going to beat Bivol because
I don't think so.
But you know what I mean? Like the momentum, like yeah. Benavidez just won. Bivol has been out for a year and has a back surgery. He might as well have a cane and be in a retirement home right now, Bivol. I mean, that's just the way he's looked at, but that's still one heck of a fight. So that's the latest with Benavidez. You know it was a big performance. You know it was a big win when we're into the next week and there's still conversations happening about him. I love that. Big fight this weekend. Heavyweights. Big meaty men throwing heat. This is the definition of that ridiculous phrase. It's Fabio Wardley. It's Daniel Dubois. Two top 10 heavyweights. Wardley is the WBO champion. Having a very hard time picking a winner for this fight because both guys kind of mirror each other in terms of power, in terms of being down, adversity. It's just a really great heavyweight fight, and I love when heavyweight fights are 50-50 and high stakes. And this and Wardley Dubois is exactly that.
So what's the term? Big meaty men throwing heat, right?
Yes.
Big
yes,
meaty men throwing heat. So this is not exactly that, because normally we use that for guys that were on a much lower level. These guys are world class. They check all the boxes for big meaty men throwing heat because they're big guys. They can knock each other out. They have big power. But this is high level stuff. We're fighting for a world title here, and Dubois is a former world champion. This is very, very high level for that term. But to your point, I think what you're saying is like this fight is so hard to pick because one of how destructive they both are, and two how vulnerable they both are. Which makes this like the kind of fight, like it's walking on edge every moment of the fight. This is an awesome, awesome heavyweight fight. If you like heavyweight bangers, this, I mean, who doesn't? Literally, who doesn't? This is such a good fight.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's, the fact that it has a heavyweight title on the line, the winner should be in line for some really big fights. Wardley can keep this unbelievable streak going. If he wins this fight, like he could get an Usyk fight. There's a chance he fights Tyson Fury if things fall out with Joshua. Just big fights are on the horizon for both winners because you have a piece of the heavyweight title. But for Wardley, his last five fights, he's got the two Frazier-Clark wins. One of them, he dented his skull.
Ridiculous.
He had a draw with Clark in the first fight. Right. Didn't realize that.
And then the second one was a first-round KO where he dented
his skull. First-round denting of the head.
Viral moment.
Viral, for sure. The two vulnerable fights. The two fights where made Fabio Wardley into what he is now is the Justice Hooney win and the Joseph Parker win. The Hooney win, he was legitimately down on the cards. Like 88-83, 89-82, 89-82. He was down. This is a Hail Mary. This is a buzzer. Like, this is a crazy win in the 10th round to drop Hooney. He follows that up with the Parker stoppage where it was pretty nip and tuck. He wasn't down like he was in the Hooney fight, but it was a very close fight. Power late. 10th round against Hooney. 11th round against Parker. This is my problem with Wardley. It's like, okay, he has crazy knockout power and it carries late in fights. He can battle through adversity as shown by the Hooney fight and the Parker win. But we're just throwing out the fact that he was down tremendously versus Justice Hooney. And it was pretty damn close to losing against Joseph Parker. So that plays into my psyche here and how I look at Fabio Wardley.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were saying earlier about the vulnerability of these two, and especially Wardley. And Wardley, there's a big question mark on Wardley because of how little we've seen him. Like
no amateur career either.
No amateur career to speak of.
Or small, like 20 fights they said.
Yeah, but some of them are white collar fights, fighting like businessmen.
That's nuts.
It's nuts. It's incredibly nuts.
They kick their ass.
Yeah, I actually heard a story in the gym today about that. There was this guy who actually, really? I think, yeah, something like the guy actually sponsored the event and he got in and sparred Wardley. Wardley blew him out in one round.
And this guy just has like a 9-to-5?
He like owned the company. He's like a rich guy and he went in and he blew him out. But Wardley's just one of those guys. Like he's so fun to watch because there's the risk. Because of what your watch is like, you know, he could lose at any moment, but he's still undefeated and he knocks everybody out. But he's also really fun to watch because he's very athletic. He is a big athletic dude. The way he moves, the power that he generates, the willingness too. He's got balls at heavyweight, man. It's like he doesn't know any better. Like, he doesn't know these guys can hurt him. So he just like goes. And even when he gets hurt, he has no fear in him whatsoever. I really like Wardley a lot. And Dubois, he's a guy, when he's on, he's an absolute nightmare. He's a tank.
Yeah.
He is a destructive force. He's one of the strongest guys walking this earth at heavyweight. He is brutally, brutally strong. He actually had a good amateur background, by the way. A good amateur pedigree, which I had to look up. He was like a five-time national champion over there. But, so he's not just like this brute who comes in. He knows what he's doing in there. And he's another one. He can end a fight at any time. But at the same time, we've seen him get stopped multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times. But again, my famous quote is, no one has a good chin at heavyweight because it just takes one punch with these guys.
Of course.
Wardley's been down on the scorecards. He's been hurt against lesser competition. So, yeah, I think the most intriguing part about this fight is the question marks. We don't know. It's what you want in a heavyweight fight.
You want to sit back and just watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the chaos just grab the unfold. Popcorn. And just, I think it's going to be on around 5, 6 p.m. Eastern in the States. Last five for Dubois, he's got the Usyk loss, which, he built up to get to that spot, the low blow, the body shot. Things really went haywire for him after that. And then followed it up with three massive wins. Jarrell Miller, the Hergovic win, which I think was, he might have looked the most complete. And then the Joshua fight, which was just amazing in terms of how many people were there and the spectacle and then him just washing Joshua.
All underdogs, all knockouts.
Huge. And the Hergovic one too. Hergovic was bullying Dubois all week. You know, just so, crazy so
was
Jarrell. Lines.
Jarrell was bullying him as well.
Right, because he was coming off the Usyk fight, and up until that point, the fighters were looking at Dubois and boxing fans as well as, like, this guy is, like, you know, he's not mentally strong. You know, the Joe Joyce fight was still in their minds, even though it was 3 years before the Usyk loss. So there were fighters were like, all right, this guy, we can get inside of his head, and we can manipulate him, and we could intimidate him. Miller tried and failed. He lost that fight. Hrgović, I mean, he got stopped by Dubois, and I'll touch on that in a second, why I thought he looked so great in that fight. And then the Joshua win, which was just epic. And then he follows it up with the Usyk loss, which so many things went wrong there. I mean, the game plan was horrendous. Partying before the fight.
Whoa.
I've never heard of that. I mean, Chris, can you imagine going to fight Pacquiao and you have all your buddies at your house, like 40, 50 deep? And you're just having the time of your life, and then you get in an Uber, and you head over to the arena.
That was the day of the fight?
Yes.
Oh, boy. But that just shows you the mental weakness that he was already checked out.
Yeah. And then he fights the worst fight.
Yeah, of course. If you're not mentally locked in, and he's a guy who's all mentality, all mental, all psychology, because physically he's got it. That guy rolls out of bed and can knock out a dinosaur. That he needs the mental strength like he did in those three underdog come from behind fights, or come from the B side position, because he wasn't behind in any of those fights. I didn't hear about that.
You didn't see these videos.
Oh boy. That's
bro, it was a wild scene. Like, he came out after the fight.
How pissed are his, like, people?
Well, he fired his trainer after that, Don Charles, and then now he's now hired him back. So it's been a chaotic year. Like, I mean, that fight was last July against Usyk. He hasn't fought since. We're in May now, so it's been 10 months. So in those 10 months, he has the Usyk loss. He has the bad game plan. He has partying before the fight. Then he goes and fires Don Charles and hires Tony Sims, only to rehire Don Charles for this fight. And I read a story on that. This Charles is just, like, very happy. He's just, like, never said anything bad about him. Just chaos. Chaos for Dubois. And you said something there that I 100% agree with in my notes right here. If Dubois is in the right mindset, he should win. But how do we know? Like, we don't know what he's thinking. He's stormed out of interviews this week. Did you watch the interview with Ariel? Mm-hmm. He just straight up left it. He left the zone one too. That's just more about him just not wanting to do media and him just being a peculiar guy.
Yeah, he's an introvert. He's obviously, you know, he's not a media savvy guy. He's not a talker. He's a doer.
Not a dresser either.
No, his outfits are
they're getting better.
Interesting.
Remember he showed up to that one, he was in like a bike, like he was in like leotards and like a giant leather jacket. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I kind of respect it. He doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't give a shit, or he doesn't know better. It's I don't know.
Both. And that's another thing. Like, but the media stuff is just interesting. Like, he goes on Ariel's show, it's a huge platform, and he just wasn't into it at all. And Ariel picked up on it. He's like, you want to leave? He's like, kinda. And then he ends up just dipping out. And they did the same thing to his own one, which I've been there. It's very hard to ask fighters anything on fight week. Like, they are hungry, they are ornery, they are aggressive.
I get that. Because doing media is exhausting. Like, what is expected of a fighter who carries a promotion? The energy you have to put out into the world all week long, and you're being paraded nuts around, especially if you're one of those guys who actually does do good media, and so the promotion wants to utilize that to try and sell. It's very taxing. It saps you. They run you around all week. I've been there, and I've walked out of interviews before. I've been hungry doing interviews. I've been wanting to, you know, bail on things and just kind of gritting my teeth through it. So I get it. I definitely get it.
It's one thing whenever it's like the day before the weigh-in and we're in the rooms getting ready for the fighters, I'm like, no food in here, guys. Like, do not eat in front of the fighters. That's just disrespectful, number one.
Yep.
And just to show like a glimpse of like what it is like. So last week for the Benavidez fight week, I was in the lower parts of the MGM Grand Arena, and there's legitimately five rooms. Every room has a different sign on the door. There's a DAZN room where they want you to sit down and do interviews. There's a Golden Boy room where they want you to sit down and do interviews for Golden Boy socials. There's the PPV.com room, which was our room, where they want you to do interviews. There's a photo shoot room where you just like throw punches, and you get to there's five different rooms. And that's five different lines of questions, five different lines where you have to be on and sell the
fight. And they're all
the
same questions. It is aggravating as all hell.
Hey, that's why these fighters are excited when they see my dumb face, because I'm not going to ask them anything. How was camp and all that? We're going to have some fun. This is not about me. It's about the fighters. But then from there, they go upstairs and they go to Radio Row. And I watch Benavidez go to every single table. Freaking AM radio for the Dodgers. Small podcast, big podcast. And it's one thing. That's why he is who he is. And it's one thing about Canelo that was insane. I watched Canelo do this, trying to make weight too, like boiling down to 168, you know, dry mouth, like giving me, like, you can just tell he's hungry and doesn't want to do it. But he does it, and he gives great answers. Part of the job. It's part of being a professional. And it's really impressive to watch some of these fighters do it. Then you have guys like Dubois who just, like, can't be bothered with it, and that's fine. Like, I expect every fighter to kind of have that situation with me. But Dubois, it's just part of who he is now. It's just part of his whole makeup and his shtick. I don't know if it's on purpose. I don't know if he just doesn't want to do media. But it just leads to the whole mindset. And if his mindset is right, like you said, Chris, if he's got his trainer back, when he's on, he's on. But when he's off, he got absolutely blown out by Usyk. I expected that fight to be so much more competitive.
When I think about him in media, like, he looks like the kind of guy who kind of, like, will sit down and be like, listen, man, I show up and I hit hard. Just put me in the ring.
Just say that. He doesn't do that, though.
That would be great. Just like, I don't know, man. Just put me in a ring. I'm going to knock him out. This is what I do. I show up and I hit hard. Let's get to the fight. That would be cool, actually. That would actually go viral. That's a good.
Well, he's going viral now for leaving.
Yeah, well.
Interviews.
Guys have been doing that since the beginning of time, since the beginning of media. It's just now that we see everything. There's so much access now. It's ridiculous. I mean.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm part of the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
So are you. Yeah, you're media now.
I am.
You're media. Talk about, like, inside the ring with Dubois. And I went back and watched the Hrgović fight.
The amount of right hands he took in that fight was insane.
Hrgović or Dubois?
Dubois walking through Hrgović's right hands.
He's got a heck of a chin. That's the thing. Like, we'll get to Chris's categories in a second. Like, both these guys, like I said at the top of the show, they do a lot of they have a lot of the same attributes. You know, they're very powerful. They have really good chins. The only thing I think is temperament is different. I think Wardley is that guy's got a great head on his shoulders, strong team. It seems like he's got everything going for him there. But when I watched Dubois Hrgović, I was like, why did Dubois have so much success? Dude landed 28 jabs in the first three rounds. He was very dedicated to it. He fought behind the jab, and that's how he landed his power shots. Ultimately, ended the fight. A bunch of cuts over Hrgović's eyes. Couldn't go on with the fight. Usyk fight. Only landed 11 jabs in the first five rounds. Completely abandoned the jab. Didn't have any distance. Just was in the perfect distance for Usyk to just land bombs.
Yeah, but it's Usyk. First of all, how many people land?
Southpaw.
How many people land jabs on Usyk? Second of all, southpaw, yes. And that's the thing. When you're fighting a southpaw, especially one who's quicker than you, all Usyk does is gets his head offline and puts his left hand on your chin. It really makes you not want to throw your left hand.
Is that it? That was the last shot that on Dubois. Yeah. He turned and then he it was such a beautiful punch by Usyk.
That's the typical southpaw dealing with a jabber. That's what Pacquiao did to me. It was very difficult to get the jab going on Pacquiao. I stuck to it. He hit me a lot. But yeah, that's what they do. They get the head offline, especially when they're quicker. If they're quicker than you, very difficult to get your jab going with a southpaw. But to your point, which made me just think of that, even the Joshua fight, the jab was a major weapon. He was hurting Joshua with the jab. He rocked Joshua with the jab early on. And that's where I was talking about the amateur background of Dubois. The guy, he's not just a bruiser. He's got a jab. It's a battering ram jab. You saw it against Hrgović, who is a big, slow, plodding guy. But yeah, I mean, Wardley, he's a big guy too. He's not very defensive either.
Yeah, the jab was there. He threw 9 of 30 in the first round jabs against Joshua.
He landed 9 jabs in the first round against Joshua?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a big number. Jabs. For people at home, that's actually a big number for a round one.
Yeah, when you see how little jabs are thrown in today's boxing.
Especially heavyweight.
And then there's 7 of 25 in the second round. He was pretty consistent with throwing it and went down a little bit. The fourth and fifth round, it turned into a firefight. Yeah, obviously you're not going to jab on Usyk because he's a southpaw. And I was reading up on what Don Charles was saying about this is like Dubois struggles with southpaws. I mean, Don Charles came out and said it. The three wins in a row, his best performances were all against orthodox fighters. Fabio Worley's an orthodox fighter. Therefore, I think the jab will be a big-time component. I think Dubois will be a little bit more measured in this fight. When I say measured, is like use the right distance here. Don't stand in range against Wardley, who is a lethal puncher. And Wardley is a little bit of a slow starter, obviously. He's been down on multiple cards in these big fights. So I do expect the jab to be a big-time component for Dubois. Reinventing the wheel here. Throw the jab, land the jab. It's probably the number one punch in all of boxing and the recipe for a win.
It is the number one punch box. That's why it's called the one. Our jab is called the one. It's a one and a two.
What's the saying? Yeah, a good jab can
A good right hand will take you around the block. A good jab will take you around the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one. That's Dubois' mindset and Dubois in the ring. Wardley, slow starter. Just the fact that he can carry that power late is what makes him so damn exciting. He's like a heavyweight Arturo Gatti. He's building up this mystique and he's building up this aura of I can stop you at any time, especially late, even if I'm down on the cards. And I think that's a really cool aspect of Wardley.
I'm really thinking deeply about this fight right now as we're going through this.
So am I. I have no idea who to pick. Still haven't come up with a prediction.
I've got mine, but let's
I put out a tweet and I said I'm having a hard time picking Wardley Dubois. Todd Grisham, smart ass that he is, responds, flipping a coin is not considered research, Dan.
Listen.
It is for this fight.
I've talked to Todd while betting. Sometimes you got to flip a coin.
This is the type of fight where I almost don't even want to make a prediction, but this is the job we have. I almost want to just sit back and be like, I have no idea. I'm just going to sit back and watch it. The odds for this fight right now, very close. Minus 125, Wardley is the favorite. Plus 100 for Dubois. That's as close as you're going to get in boxing odds in a heavyweight title fight. It's basically a pick 'em. Over-under is 8.5. Over 8.5 is plus 100. Wardley by knockout, plus 130. Wardley by decision, plus 600. Dubois by knockout, plus 170. Dubois by decision, plus 550.
Very, very close.
Yeah, it's all plus money. It just comes down to who you think is going to knock out who. Because that's where the value is. It's like pick your guy, and it's most likely going to end in a knockout.
I mean, this is why we love this fight, right? It hits all parameters of a good heavyweight fight.
How about some of these, though, Chris? Fabio Worley to win and over 1.5 knockdowns in the fight, plus 240.
Now we're really getting into the weeds.
Yeah, these are fun, like for heavyweight fights like this. Both fighters to be knocked down, plus 350.
I might bet that.
I don't usually dabble with these.
The props.
If you're building a parlay,
the props are fun. The props make it fun.
Props are fun. Props make it fun. If you can, you can get the right one. Punch that props. You can do those. But both guys to hit the canvas. I think that could happen.
I'm putting money on that, actually. I think I'm going to do that. Which I'm going to be on the mic for this fight this weekend, which is really upsetting because I'm not going to be able to like go crazy watching this fight. Because literally, I made a lot of money on Wardley knocking out Parker. Remember that? I bet that. And I literally was sitting in my backyard. As he stopped him, I ran a lap, full speed sprint around my pool, in because of how much money I won at that.
Bro, that there was nothing better than winning a sports bet.
Yeah, but also I had personal pride on that because friend of the show Tommy Razor Ranone told me all week Parker stops him. Parker's gonna beat him up. Watch this. So I had
that's also fun too.
That was that might have been even more fun than the money.
Right, yeah. Winning money is great. Winning a sports bet is great. Knowing more than your buddies
and rubbing it in their face.
Proving your buddies wrong. Yeah, there's nothing also winning and then the both of them together. Oof. Bliss.
Yeah, full sprint around the pool. Full sprint.
That's so I don't know with this one. Let's get to Chris's categories for a very, 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 very close nip-and-tuck heavyweight affair. I'm pulling them up right now. We got power, speed, chin, IQ. We'll start with power.
This is a tough one. All top to bottom, all of these are very tough with these two guys for all the reasons that we've been talking about it. But power, I'm going Dubois. He just has the raw power.
Wow.
He really has the raw power. I just think, I said, he's one of the strongest men walking on the earth at heavyweight. And we've been hearing about his power for years. I think he's had the tougher strength of schedule in terms of the guys that he's fought. Stopping Ergovic is a big deal. Stopping Anthony Joshua is a big deal. Wardley doesn't have names like that on his record. The Parker fight was amazing, especially a guy who was really hard to stop. So that would be, you know, the notable one. Yeah, he dented, you know, that guy's head. He knocked out Hooney with the one shot. So it's there. But I feel like his power comes more from his athleticism, and he catches you. Where Dubois is just brutally strong. I think he's just strong in every way. He can hurt you to the body. He can hurt you to the head. He's right hands or left hooks. We saw a lot of that power. Stopping Jarrell Miller. Jarrell Miller is a super durable guy. That was very impressive, too. So I'm giving a slight advantage in power to Dubois. But both of these guys can end the fight because it's all relative. Because we're going to get in the chin in a moment.
Speed.
Speed Wardley. I just think he is a fleeter-footed, more athletic. He fights with his hands down. He fires from there. He moves around the ring quite well for a big guy. And I can't speak more about how athletic he is and the way he moves. So the speed is 100% his advantage.
Usually we have defense on these, but since it's the heavyweights and since it's such a powerful fight, we're going to go with chin here.
Yeah, and both guys have pretty leaky defense, to be brutally honest. They both get hit a lot. They, you know, Dubois has been down and out before. Wardley's been hurt. Wardley's been outboxed. Chin, I'm going Wardley only because he hasn't been stopped.
Right.
Now the guy's undefeated. We've seen Dubois stopped multiple times. And chin is not just how good you take the shot, it's also what happens with your psychology. If you're gonna wilt and quit, which we've seen Dubois do, that's gonna hurt this score as well. So Wardley, based on his desire to go into the fire over and over again, and he has never shown any psychological wilt whatsoever. Again, hasn't been with the same kind of competition, but I got to go with Wardley. He's never been stopped. He's never been beat. He's been hurt. He recovers well, but he doesn't lose desire. He's never been hurt and then cowered. He fights. Dubois, I can't say the same.
IQ.
IQ, I'm going Dubois. This might be surprising.
I'm surprised.
We mentioned the jab. We mentioned that he has a good jab. He uses it. I mentioned his amateur pedigree. Wardley has little to no amateur experience. 20, 30 fights is not much for a guy like that. He started late. And a lot of what he does well in the ring, and he does a lot well in the ring, is based off his athleticism, reaction, and balls. Wardley has big balls. He's willing to scrap. He doesn't mind fighting these guys that have devastating power. He throws with them. He'll be behind. That's a superpower. Being able to be behind but still have self-belief, Wardley has that. But I think a lot of his skill set comes from his athleticism and his psychology. So Dubois, I'm going to go with the higher level of skill based on his experience. Also, again, strength of schedule. Cannot go past experience.
Mm-hmm. You would think, like, IQ and Dubois don't exactly go hand in hand.
You don't think of it, but boxing IQ is a different thing then.
Right. You see, the things he's said and how he carries himself, the interviews, the ring IQ, the game plan for Usyk. But it's like, once again, it's relative, and you're gonna, and like I put this on socials, we should put that in parentheses. It's relative to the guy you're facing.
That's another thing. Yeah.
Whatever. They have to put this disclaimer on that. Did you also see the video? Dubois was on a bus promoting the fight. There's a tree coming, and he had to be tapped to duck it.
Oh boy,
that would have been taken out by a tree.
That would
imagine the fight.
Oh, fights off because you're doing a marketing campaign and got knocked out of a bus by a tree. Which Dubois probably wouldn't even hurt him. He would be like, whatever.
I found that it was a little like, I'm looking for anything in this to find a winner in a prediction. I'm looking for any type of information that I can get. The way he had to be tapped on the shoulder.
So you're thinking maybe his reactions aren't there?
Yeah. Had to be told that there was a tree coming, and he just narrowly missed it.
I look
so at I don't like that.
I look at Dubois like a superhero. Like, he's like for me, like the Thing from Fantastic Four, or like the Incredible Hulk. Like he just looks so strong and so durable, yeah. And big and just like the way he moves everything. He's like the Thing from Incredible Hulk. Like that tree, that's a tree branch will break on me.
it wouldn't stand a chance. I do like that Wardley. He's not really. You could see Dubois trying to get to the mind, into the head of Wardley. They had a pretty epic stare down. At one of the events this week, they just got another press conference today. Tomorrow's the weigh-in, Friday the weigh-in. You can see Dubois trying to intimidate him, which is funny because Dubois was the one being bullied, mm-hmm. and now it's like the opposite. He's like trying to stand over him. He's aggressive with the face-off, and Wardley is not biting on any of it. And that kind of goes to like the mental aspect, which I like to take a look at times. Like I think Wardley, I don't think anything phases this guy. He's pretty Teflon.
No, he's cool, intelligent, and you know, he comes from a different world. He's a different kind of guy. Like, I could see him like hanging with the boys, you know, the finance bros, and being just, you know, one of those cocky athletic guys who's just like, yeah, whatever. All right, we talk shit.
The boxing.
We talk shit all day. Like you're not gonna get under my skin. This is what I do. Kind of situation. That's kind of the air that he has about this situation, which I think is perfect. Also, I'm the champion, dude. I'm the champ. You're gonna. I know. Your experience and whatnot. I'm the undefeated champ. So, you know, That's the air you got to have.
Like being a white collar boxer, being pretty good at it, and then being like, you know what, I'm gonna try pro boxing. 20 fights later, you're a heavyweight champion, and now you're fighting one of the biggest British fights in recent memory. It's obviously the biggest one since Joshua and Dubois. Yeah. This has got a different vibe around it. It's just got like a, you know, it could mean. It could set up eat the winner for the next 5 years. Like if Dubois loses, I mean, he's got to go right back to the drawing board. That's now losses to back-to-back losses.
Yeah.
And he's already had loss early on in his career. Not that losses should matter. For Wardley, huge wins. I mean, huge fights on the upcoming docket. Predictions for Wardley versus Dubois. I don't even have a pick still. I'm going to wing it right now and say that I like Wardley by 8th round stoppage. I think the mental aspect.
You went from I don't know who's who into picking the round.
Yeah,
you want to pick the punch too? You want to? Is it going to be a right hand?
Right hook, right hook. It came to me just like the Tank Frank Martin came to me when Tank told me inside of CVS on the Vegas Strip. I like Wardley 8th round stoppage. I just think the mental aspect. He's going to be switched on. He's going to be some moments early on where Dubois is going to be very dangerous. But like I said, I like Wardley's temperament, and I like that damn right hand of his. 8th round stoppage.
Dubois should win this fight. There's no question in my mind. Based on the physicality, the jab, the fact that he's fighting an orthodox fighter, the fact that he has the experience at the higher level, the strength of schedule, all of that. He should, on paper, he should win this fight. Even though I said like my categories were split, they were split by hairs. The winner, you know, whoever I picked, it was hairs in terms of power, mm-hmm. in terms of not speed. I think Wardley is a definitely a quicker fighter, but the IQ, the speed, the chin, they're hairs separating these guys. That being said, I've never seen Wardley break. I've never even seen him bend. He's just a mentality wise, he's a hard man, and I think that's ultimately what's going to be the difference. I could see Wardley going down. I could see him getting up, willing himself back into the fight. I think he's going to be down on the cards, honestly. I think the jab is going to give him a lot of problems early on. I think the power is going to give him issues. And I think we're going to see him overcome that and stop Dubois late. And it's going to be not even like, it's not going to be like one of those like, one punch KO flattens out. It's going to be a battering. Like he's going to break you down. And Dubois is just going to be like, this guy's aura is too much. So although, like I said, Dubois should win this fight. I'm picking Wardley by late stoppage.
Should be a thriller. Both guys to hit the canvas. Plus 350.
That's a big number. Plus 350.
The Algeria special. I could see Wardley down early and then Dubois down late.
Yeah. That's why I think it's a good bet.
I think
I'm pretty much going to take that. Also, Wardley made me money last time. I bet on him out of nowhere. People thought I was crazy, and it's going to be hard to go against him again.
So. Well, he is the favorite, slightly. I mean, and when I put that out on Twitter, like, I don't know who to pick. Like, the overwhelming, it wasn't overwhelming actually. It was a lot more people saying Wardley, but there was a, it was pretty even. I just contradicted myself big time there.
I didn't understand that one, Dan.
Because I'm like looking at a text, looking at a tweet about to wrap up the show. There was more people picking Wardley in the on Twitter.
Yeah, he's the favorite. I mean, he's the favorite on in Vegas. He's a favorite, you know, obviously from the Twitter sphere. But
You'll be on the call Saturday night on DAZN. Angelo Leo versus Rais Salim. It's Leo's second defense of his IBF featherweight title. Leo defeated Luis Alberto Lopez by knockout. Another call that you were on. That was August 2024. Big time knockout there. Only loss came to Stephen Fulton. Rais Salim has been a featherweight for a while now. He had a lot of momentum a few years ago. Got it back to get to this title shot. Should be a really good fight. And obviously, featherweight is coming into focus even more because there's a lot of good champions there. And Inoue could be jumping up to that weight class in the next year. So it'd be very pertinent, very important for the champions to keep their belts so they can get into that Naoya Inoue sweepstakes.
Sleepy good fight. And it's gonna get looked over because of the heavyweight shootout that we were talking about.
At least
about.
It's not going up against it,
though. Yeah, it's not directly against it. So you could have a Dubois warm-up for this fight. This is a really good fight. Rais Salim is talented. Angel Leo has been on a hell of a run lately. Talk about strength of schedule. That Venato Lopez knockout where I was on the call was my favorite call of all time. Favorite call of all time. Especially because I predicted it. They did a whole vignette prior to it about me saying, Venato needs to watch out for the left hook, and then the left hook
ESPN,
is what iced him. Yeah, ESPN called that with our guy Joe Tess. That was my favorite commentary night of all time.
That's awesome.
So back again with Angelo Leo. I'm going to say this. The winner of this fight is going to get the Inoue fight.
Wow.
The first featherweight fight of Inoue's career, I think, is going to be the winner of this fight. I think Angelo Leo, who's fought in Japan already, I thought that was kind of like alluding to, this is the kind of fight that we could fight. He's also a guy who's coming up from 22. He was a world champion at 22, and now he's fighting at 26. So the size-wise, in a ways, people might be like, okay, this guy's not like a bigger guy who's been there the whole time. And same thing for Aleem. Aleem is the kind of guy that, he stylistically, you know, we saw how Inoue was able to handle Stephen Fulton. So you've got a style there that they could look at and be like, oh, okay, with this we can use some of that. I wouldn't be surprised if the winner of this fight is actually in that sweepstakes heavy for the Inoue's entry into featherweight. There'll also be a champion, which is a big deal. You know, Inoue fights for titles. I don't think he's going to test his toe in the water at featherweight. I think he's going to go right for a titleist because that's just how Inoue operates. But in terms of this fight, very, very good fight. Very tough fight to call as well. Angelo Leo, again, has been on a real good run lately. Looks to be in fantastic shape. But Rais Salim, spoke to him a couple weeks ago. Dude is locked in, and he's got a difficult style to deal with. He can fight. This is a really interesting fight. His only loss is to Sam Solomon by split decision. Sam Solomon can really fight too. He lost that on the road. So this is another one of those fights that's very much a pick 'em fight.
Love that fight. Featherweight division really hot right now. The Inoue aspect is really, really intriguing because this is the money guy. I mean, did you see the numbers that he produced for the Nakatani fight?
Deserved. I mean, the fight was awesome. The selling out 55,000 a month in advance is insane.
Massive gate, massive pay-per-view numbers. Not saying like a Leo fight will do that, but it would be the biggest money that Leo has ever seen to fight Inoue. And it's a huge fight, too. Like, you could be the guy that finally beat Inoue, even though like the whole Bam thing is... looks like that's going to be a thing, or at least like they're looking for it. So a weekend of really good fights. We'll have you covered on Sunday at some point with a recap episode. Safe travels to A-Town.
ATL.
They call it.
I'm coming. ATL.
I haven't been there, I don't think, ever.
Really?
They don't really do a lot of fights there.
No, I mean, I've done a bunch of fights there. Top Rank was going.
They had the overtime studio there for a while.
Yes, that's.
I never made it to any of those.
I spent a lot of time there. So I was going there every week for like 2 months because of the OTX facility.
It's the biggest fight in Atlanta history.
Ooh, see the.
I was in this. I mean, the Olympics were there in 1996. I mean, I don't.
I'm sure
that.
I'm sure there's got to be some big ones. I called Shakur and Jamel Herring there.
Well, that was pretty big.
of recent.
Muhammad Ali comeback fight against Jerry Quarry.
Ooh.
What 1970 at the Municipal Auditorium.
Municipal Auditorium. Yeah. ATL's cool. Cool culture. They
also have the Battle of Atlanta and the American Civil War.
Oh, that's a whole different kind of battle.
July 22nd, 1864.
What was that? Where did I go? I was down there. I went to a cigar.
You were there for that?
No. I was. There's a good cigar culture down there. So there's cigar places all over the place. So I like ATL, and the food's good. Food's actually very good.
I would love to go there. I'm about to book a flight to El Paso, Texas, for Holly Holm versus Jessica Hahn.
I love all of Texas. So
I'm looking now. I've been there's El Paso. No direct flights. I've been no El, direct yeah, flights.
That's a smaller area, but I love Texas. I love Texans. I love Mexicans. I love all the food that's there. I love the style of everything there. The only issue with me is there's no water. I need water, but I like.
I think Texas. El Paso has water. No, isn't it close to the water?
Yeah, but that's not the kind of water I like, dude. The Gulf is the Gulf. I need.
The Gulf is underrated. I went to what island was I in last year with MVP? I was like in the middle of nowhere, Texas. I forgot already.
Sanibel?
No, it was like that big spring break island where MVP put on a fight there. I forgot. But anyway, the Gulf was really nice. But I know it gets like the Gulf of America, I should say.
We still doing that? We still.
I don't know. It's not the end of the show because we're getting political.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the fights. We'll be back on Sunday with a recap episode. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourself at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.